This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
David Kirby has been a professional journalist for over 15 years and has written for the New York Times for the past 8. His book, Evidence of Harm, Mercury in Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy, won the 2005 Investigative Reporters and Editors Award. I'm honored to welcome to the studio, on the phone, I'm sorry, my friend David Kirby. Hey, Dave.
Hi, Coy. I wish I was in the studio. I love Charlottesville.
Absolutely. And we're finally getting some much-needed rain down here. We have some, I've got some grass in my front yard turning brown, so it's really quite wonderful to see a little bit of rain.
Well, that's good to hear.
Let's start with the book. It's in paperback now. It's a runaway bestseller. It's done tremendously well. What, Dave, has been your reaction and your thoughts to the reaction that your book has gotten around the world?
Well, I'm very gratified that I think my book has helped alter the course of this debate. When I first started, really, autism, just a couple years ago, almost everybody agreed it was purely genetic, that there was no environmental component. And, of course, the mere thought of vaccines or mercury was considered just such lunacy. And I know some people still do consider it lunacy, but obviously, we've come a long way. So I think, you know, when you hear people like, even people, heavy-duty public health people, people such as the British researcher, Dr. Simon Baron-Cohen, who just identified 1 in 58 kids in the United Kingdom with autism, even he is now conceding that there probably is some environmental component involved in at least some of these cases. So that in and of itself is a sea change in thought and perception in the way people look at autism, and I'm gratified for whatever, you know, very minor role my book helped, you know, bring that about.
Absolutely, and it had a great deal to do with that, Dave. And just to underscore a couple of things you just said, a recent study found that 1 in 58 children in Great Britain now has been diagnosed on the autism spectrum. And we don't want to forget, it's a great point, that just a few years ago, parents standing in a doctor's office and told their child has autism, and then asking, you know, well, where's it come from? Well, they were told, you know, this is just some strange genetic brain disorder. It's got nothing to do with in the environment or vaccines or mercury. And now we are hearing medical experts say, well, you know, we were probably wrong on that.
And I think when all this settles out and we find out, I think there's going to be 3, 4, 5 different kinds of quote-unquote autism. Let's just, for argument's sake, say 20% of what we call autism is a natural, inborn, genetic disorder. And of the other 80%, let's say, you know, 25% are mercury and vaccines. 25% might be some combination of mercury and some other, perhaps, live virus, who knows, and the rest might be PCBs or pesticides or aluminum. We just don't know. But I think what we do know is that kids today are exposed to more toxins than ever before, whether in their vaccines or in the environment. When you see the environmental stuff coming out now, I mean, it's just devastating, the amount of mercury circulating in the atmosphere, a lot of it because of the industrial expansion in China. You know, we talk about CO2 emissions, and we all think Al Gore is great and everything, but for all of that CO2 expanding exponentially, you have to realize there is an equal amount of the expansion is equal in the amount of mercury. Obviously, there's more CO2 than mercury, but the growth rate is the same because it's coming from the same source. And when we look at things like the Great Lakes now, we see even the smallest fish in the Great Lakes are contaminated with methylmercury. That never used to be the case. It was only the very, very largest fish in the lake who lived long enough to accumulate mercury. Now we're seeing it in the smallest fish. And in the Northeast, we're seeing songbirds, little tiny sparrows and swallows with mercury poisoning. Again, we never used to see that. We used to see, say, eagles with mercury poisoning. There was a very famous case about a year ago, an eagle in Wisconsin, that was near death because it was eating so much mercury-contaminated fish. They gave the eagle chelation therapy. It improved and flew away.
David Kirby is with us. He's the author of Evidence of Harm, and you can read more online at evidenceofharm.com. Dave.com. And of course, the book is now available. Best-selling book is now available in paperback. Dave, what do you give us the elevator speech about your book, you know, in a nutshell for folks who might just be coming to the table on this subject?
My book is about a group of very well-educated, intelligent parents whose children, mostly boys, were born in the 90s perfectly normally, and then around 2 years of age regressed into autism. And nobody could figure out why or what was going on. And then they learned in 1999, the government announced that it had added up the amount of mercury put into childhood vaccines as a preservative and given to kids at certain points, birth, 2 months, 4 months, 6 months, a year, et cetera, when kids are very small and when they're still developing. And on vaccination days, these parents learned that their own kids were pushed way over, sometimes more than 100 times over, the EPA limit on mercury, daily mercury exposures. So they set out to see if there was a connection between mercury toxicity in newborns and the development of what we call autism. And they found a lot of similarities and confronted the CDC and the FDA and the drug companies and tried to get the mercury removed. And they are still fighting to this day to try to prove that this is what, in fact, happened to their children.
And your book, of course, Evidence of Harm, concludes that there is, in fact, a great deal of evidence that there is a link. And what is your answer when you're asked, and I'm sure you're asked all the time, well, my doctor said there is no evidence, that there is no link between mercury and what
right.
we call autism?
Yeah. Well, I've got to be careful because I wouldn't say that my book concludes that there is a link. I think my book concludes that there is evidence that needs to be pursued and that when taken together, the larger picture, it would look like that, yes, in some children with a certain genetic predisposition who were overdosed with mercury, it may indeed have caused some of the gut problems and nervous system problems and immune system problems that we see in these kids. And we know that mercury can cause gut problems and immune problems and nervous system problems and brain damage. So when people say there is no evidence of a link, they are talking almost exclusively about large population studies, so-called epidemiology, which never looked at a single child with autism. These are guys in a university or at the CDC somewhere looking at computerized data and trying to see if there is a link, if there are any trends between increased exposures to mercury in vaccines and the number of autism cases reported. Now, these studies in their final published version suggest or insist or say that there is no link, that they could find no connection. Each of these studies have their own particular flaws and limitations that have been critiqued by experts, including a panel at the National Institutes of Health. And epidemiology alone is not sufficient to prove or disprove causation. You can never, especially when you're dealing with a small subset of kids that might be more particularly vulnerable, they may not show up in a large population study. And population studies are subject to other problems, including immigration and things like that. So what you need to do is conduct the bench science, the biology. You have to go to the other side. You have to look at the kids themselves. You have to do the biochemistry. You have to look at the cellular level, the molecular level. You have to compare an autistic kid biochemically to a typical kid. You need to do clinical studies, animal models, test tube models. And when we look at that side of the research being done at some of the top universities in the country and published in some of the top journals, a picture begins to emerge of a plausible biological mechanism whereby in some kids this mercury and other mercury and probably other toxins were allowed to accumulate to the point where the child was no longer able to handle it, could not excrete it. Probably from the beginning, their excretion capabilities seem to have gotten even worse with further exposures, so that this mercury was allowed to reach its targets. Again, the gut, the brain, and the immune system being the three big ones.
We're talking with award-winning investigative reporter David Kirby about his book, Evidence of Harm, online at evidenceofharm.com. Let's return to our conversation with David Kirby, award-winning and best-selling author. His book is Evidence of Harm, Mercury and Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy. Dave, what do you say to, there's a lot of doctors out there, there's a whole lot of pediatricians that have looked at this a lot of them right here in Charlottesville. We got two fantastic hospitals right here, and they will just insist that the reason we're seeing more kids with autism has nothing to do with any environmental factors and everything to do with better diagnosis on their part.
Well, then they're admitting that they were really, really lousy doctors up until a few years ago. When you think about it, what other choice do they have? Either they were just so ignorant and so bad at diagnosing and just let practically a generation of kids go by undetected, or those kids weren't here 10, 15, 20 years ago. It's amazing that doctors are willing to admit that they were so lackadaisical and so, you know, this would, if that would then imply that they were basically negligent in their practices to let so many kids go undiagnosed. I think among the milder cases, among the so-called high-functioning Asperger kids, absolutely, there are kids being diagnosed today that wouldn't have been given an autism diagnosis years ago. But that's a small minority of what we call autism and could not possibly account for this explosion. I mean, one in 58 kids in the United Kingdom, and if it's 4-to-1 boy ratio, I'm not a mathematician, but that's something like one in 30 boys. One boy in every classroom virtually with some form of autism. So yes, I think some of the increase can be explained on better diagnosis. But if you're talking about classic full-blown autism, and from the studies we have, for example, in Brick Township, 6 out of 1,000 children in Brick Township, New Jersey, had autism. Of those 6, 4 had so-called full-blown classic autism. That is unmistakable. I can now spot autism 100 yards away walking down the street. I can hear autism. I know what it sounds like. I can hear a kid coming from around the corner and turn the corner, and sure enough, that kid is on the spectrum, or I'm 99% certain. So if I can do it, it's inexplicable that for 10, 20, 30 years, American doctors were just simply oblivious to all these kids, particularly when you think about the regression. If you think that in the 70s and 80s, parents would have had kids born perfectly normally at the same rate they're being born now and then regress into autism at 2 years old and then not bring them into the doctor and not try to figure out what was going on. The reason we have so many autism services now is because there's so much more demand for it. Ask any school teacher. And finally, you know, my argument to that is to go back and look at full-blown autism cases. California has always only tracked full-blown autism cases. If your kid is more milder on the spectrum, they don't get into the system and they don't get counted. Over the years, those numbers went up and up and up and up every single year. That's not wider diagnosis. That's not you know, including the milder cases. They've never been counted in California, and the numbers still went up. Kids have until they're 18 or 21 years old to get into the system. If we look at, you know, the 6 to 9 year olds, they're like through the roof in California. But if we look at the 10 to 15 year olds and the 16 to 21 year olds, there's a lot less of them. So where are those kids? Why haven't their parents gotten them enrolled in the system? Why hasn't a single teacher or relative or neighbor spoken out? Again, remember, these are kids with full-blown autism, and said, you know what, your kid has autism in the, you know, your kid is in the public schools and there's a system available, special services for people with autism. Why are the parents of the younger children 2-3 times more likely to avail themselves of those services in this day and age than the older children?
My guest is David Kirby, award-winning and best-selling author. His book is Evidence of Harm, now in paperback and online at evidenceofharm.com. What's the latest on the numbers in California? And explain, why is it that we look to California for these numbers?
Well, again, because California has been tracking them for so long, and California only tracks full-blown autism, so we cannot attribute the increase to including things like Asperger and pervasive developmental disorder, the so-called more milder. They only count full classic, and those have been going up. Well, funny you should ask, the new numbers are out today for the second quarter of 2007. Now, the state of California breaks down the numbers by age group, and everybody's looking at the youngest kids, the 3 to 5 year olds, and I'm sorry to report that this quarter the numbers went up again. They went up pretty much about the same average as they have gone up every quarter for the last several years. Interesting, they went up much, much less than they did the second quarter of last year. I don't know what that means. But you have to remember, 3 to 5 year olds are kids born. 5 year olds were born in 2002. And in California, there is plenty of reason to believe that most kids in 2002 were still getting large amounts of mercury in their vaccines. Kids born in 2003, quite likely as well. It turns out that privately, somebody has been paying for these kids to be broken down by birth year, which means we can now look at the three-year-olds alone. In other words, kids born in 2004. In the first quarter of 2007, those kids, that number was down compared to the first quarter of 2006. So that was the first comparative drop we've ever seen since these statistics have been kept. It was a small drop. It was about 5%. What we now need to do, and I'm waiting for the call back from Sacramento. I was hoping they were going to call me back before I went on the air. They're going to give me, hopefully, the new three-year-old numbers. We'll see if they dropped again this quarter or not. It will be very interesting. If there's a second quarter deficit in 2007 compared to 2006, it'll make it that much more difficult to catch up by the end of the year, so that we may well or may not, it's just, you know, we're right on the cusp, but we may, and I really stress may, see a decline in the number of three-year-olds with autism in California this year compared to last year.
Which would mean what?
Well, yes.
Or could mean what?
It would mean that those children had received less mercury in their vaccines. Therefore, one possible explanation would be they're presenting with fewer cases of full-blown autism. Now, confounding all of this are a couple of things. One, like I mentioned, is immigration. Most of the increase we're seeing in the numbers in California right now come from Asian and Hispanic kids. We don't know how many of those were born in California and how many were born overseas, but we do know the ones born overseas are being vaccinated with the full amount of mercury in their vaccines. So of these three-year-olds presenting with autism, we need to find out how many were vaccinated in their country of birth. We also need to find out how many received the flu shot and how many of their mothers received the flu shot while pregnant, because that also contains the full amount of mercury. And then finally, there's a lot of early intervention programs in California, very aggressive and successful ones, and the age of diagnosis has come down every single year. So that means you would expect to see more 3 to 5 year olds being diagnosed, you know, earlier on rather than later in life. So I think, you know, I think we're just right in the moment of decision. Now, it'll be interesting to see if the 3 year olds drop this quarter. We really need to wait till the end of this year. If there is absolutely no decline among 3 year olds at the end of this year compared to the end of last year, that's a pretty serious blow for the thimerosal theory, but again, maybe thimerosal is not fueling the entire epidemic. Now, I threw off a hypothetical number. Let's say thimerosal caused 20% of the cases. Then we should see a 20% drop. We saw a 5% drop. If we see another 5% drop this quarter, you know, we're halfway there, halfway through the year. So everybody needs to just sort of sit tight and see how this plays out.
Investigative reporter David Kirby is my guest. His book is Evidence of Harm. You can read more online at evidenceofharm.com. The phone lines are open at 977-1070, and Betty is on the phone. Betty, you're on with David Kirby. Go right ahead.
Yes, hi. My interest is, I have listened to quite a few programs about this connection between mercury and autism, and I know many, many scientists disagree that there is any evidence, but I know this new data coming out is interesting. But I guess my question is, we're hearing so much about poisons in Chinese foods coming into this country, very serious things. And also, we have no idea about the drugs we're all taking, you know, medications, and what we don't even know what's in a lot of these, let alone all the herbal preparations that people get at health food stores, and almost all this is coming from China. And why wouldn't we think that perhaps huge increases that we're seeing in not only autism, but, you know, cancer in this country and all kinds of things. I mean, I don't like to be, you know, a conspiracy theorist or anything, but do we really know what is causing these things?
No, we don't know. We need to find out. And, you know, I know a lot of mercury from coal is coming from China, and I don't mean to be anti-Chinese by any means, but, you know, we live in a globalized economy now and apparently a globalized weather system and or pollution system, I should say. And the melamine in the dog food was very, very serious. Now the poison in the bacteria in the toothpaste. And I just found out in doing research for another book that a lot of our processed cheese and dairy products contain modified milk proteins, something like that. And these often come from China and India and places where there's virtually no regulatory control or environmental control. And it's just so ironic that, the government and the pharmaceutical industry fights tooth and nail from importing foreign drugs, prescription drugs, saying we don't know how safe they are, we need to protect the American people. But when it comes to our food, or for that matter our choo-choo trains painted with lead, it's perfectly fine to import them, and nobody seems to have a problem with it. So it does need to be looked into. I like I said, I think autism will turn out to be a number of different causes. I think the food supply, the water supply, what's in our air, I hate to sound alarmist, but again, if you look at those little fish in Lake Michigan, they're sick and they never used to be, or they have mercury and they never used to. So we have reached some kind of saturation point, some kind of tipping point, it would appear, and these kids are the canaries in the coal mine, and boy, we better figure it out fast, because if we don't stop what's happening, that one in 58, you know, for all we know, maybe that's the same rate if we looked hard enough in this country, it's only going to get worse with or without mercury and vaccines. If it is this sort of combined dirty world thing, and that would include food products imported from places like China as possible contributors.
Betty, thank you so much for the call. We're talking with David Kirby. He's the author of Evidence of Harm, Mercury and Vaccines and the Autism Epidemic, a Medical Controversy, online at evidenceofharm.com. Dave, as usual, I've got a long list in front of me, and we don't have enough time for everything, but I did want to ask you, if I can, real quick, about the firing of Don Imus. I know that you were a frequent guest on Imus's morning program, and that his wife was very involved in the autism community. And what were your thoughts on his prompt dismissal from the airwaves?
Well, I actually wrote about it for the Huffington Post. I mean, what he said was reprehensible, and he deserved some kind of castigation. I think, personally, CBS and MSNBC acted too abruptly and not even kind of stupidly from a business point of view. They should have made Imus have Al Sharpton on every Friday morning, you know. You can imagine half the country tuning in to listen to that, but they chose to go another way with it, and I think Imus will be back. But what I noted was that the fact that he kept this story alive, the fact that he even discovered evidence of harm and put it on television in the first place, is the only reason this story got where it got. And he was following this, and he didn't care, and people were telling him to stop it, and he didn't stop it. And as soon as he went off the air, you know, I wrote, you know, the timing is pretty interesting because we have a big hearing coming up at the Institute of Medicine about environmental factors. We have this 3-week trial in federal court coming up that's not going to get the kind of coverage it deserves, et cetera. And, you know, Imus was silent. He wasn't there every morning to talk about this. And not just this, things like the way our soldiers are being treated, and a lot of these guys are coming back with all kinds of problems, physical and psychological, and nobody's talking about it.
He was, for many, many issues, really the only voice.
Exactly, and he's gone. And I think, you know, we're worse off for it. As horrible and racist and offensive as what he said was, you know, other people have said other things and not had their careers, you know.
Right, right. David Kirby, he's an award-winning and best-selling author. His book is Evidence of Harm. It's online at evidenceofharm.com. Dave, it's always a pleasure, and I appreciate everything you do.
Thank you, Coy. I'm happy to be on with you anytime.
This interview will be archived in its entirety on the Charlottesville Podcasting Network at cvillepodcast.com.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.